This is CliffCentral.com. Fashion Lab on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to the Fashion Lab show. My name is Lizzo Gumbo-Regis for your host, and thank you for tuning into this lab once again. Now, last week we were touching base on the current affairs around everything happening in the fashion world with echoes from Europe with Francisca Marzilli, our fashion expert, and Edgy Benson, our fashion expert from New York, with his echoes from New York. And this was really, really, I hope that for those of you who tuned in, you got to kind of get some information that can help you move ahead. Now, before getting too deep into today's show, we're definitely focusing this week on the next steps towards moving your fashion business to the next level. This is not the rule book. It's not the 50 Shades of Grey handbook. This is just us basically saying, listen, no, if you know what's better for you in Nigeria, they say, just listen. If you know what's better for you, take what you want to take with you and, you know, and do what you want to do with it to be able to help enhance or develop your brand journey. Now, a quick reminder for those of you who are tuned in for the first time. I've got my favorite segment at the end of the show called Who Would You Want to Dress and Why? So feel free to share with us your who's and your why's, because I call that the red glass of wine. My gosh, can someone please bring us that wine? Anyway, the wine's coming at the end of the show. We are, keep your tweets coming. We're on Fashion Lab AF on Twitter. We are on Fashion Lab Africa, Fashion Lab Africa on Facebook. We're on Fashion Lab Africa on Instagram. We would love to hear from you. Now, joining us on today's show is a very special guest. Like I said, he's a UK-based e-commerce expert with an experience of over 20 years working with some of the biggest global fashion brands, including your Harrods, LVMH, Estée Lauder, and I will not go on. I'm going to just take a pause there. I don't want to give you too much. But allow me to welcome our special guest to the show. His name is Lionel Mullen. And he's a brother, above all of the things he's doing, he's also a brother. And I know for you who are listening, you're probably thinking everyone's my brother or my sister. This one is another brother, real brother. If you want to talk to him, talk to me direct. Lionel, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And thank you.
What an intro. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Is that a good intro?
It's a fantastic intro.
Do you know what I find, Lionel? Like, most of the times, like, I intro all of these beautiful guests, and some of them, I literally have to say, hi, was that a good intro? And they're like, and I'm like, okay. But for you, only for you today.
Yeah.
I'm going to put this thing, I'm going to cut it, package it, and then just send it to you so that when they ask you what your name is, all you need to do is just hit play.
Boom.
And then play. If they like my intro, also send them to me so that we can also smile to the
most
back.
Most definitely.
Well, welcome to the show and thank you so much for joining
us. Thanks for
us.
Inviting me. Appreciate
and congratulations that. On all of your achievements so far. 20 years later, you're still in the e-commerce space playing heavy. And obviously, we're going to plug in and just also touch base on what you're doing and what you're working on. Now, I want to just go straight to the matters at hand.
Yeah.
Before we normally start the show, before we go further, you're not exempt to it. Who are you wearing and who? What are you wearing and who made your clothes? That's very important. Everyone gets asked that. It's not just you. As you can see, everybody and get yes.
Yeah, that's a
and
great
you can
question.
Be creative if you want.
Right. You know. Who am I wearing right now? I'm wearing a combination of COS, C-O-S. It's a high street brand. It's part of H&M. I'm also wearing.
So they want to know the pants.
And oh, that, yeah, that's the that's the
Scottish
pants.
Start,
of course, they can't see them. Yeah.
We're gonna tweet the picture.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm wearing COS sweatpants. I'm wearing a white t-shirt V-neck, which is M&S, high street. The trainers that I'm wearing are a very bright orange, pinky. A pair of Nike Air Force, not Air Force ones, but Air Max.
It's very nice.
Yeah, so a bit
and
of a combination.
And you're feeling comfortable.
Yeah, feeling very comfortable. It's a Tuesday night, so, you know.
Guys, it's in your real time, it is Thursday, 2 p.m. Central African time, don't be confused.
Yeah.
But yes, here we have to say it is actually about 12:35.
Let's not make it too specific.
In London.
But interestingly, I mean, the clothes that I'm wearing is sometimes dependent on the day, the time, the mood, like most people.
Very nice. But as long as you're comfortable.
Oh, yeah, I feel very comfortable.
Yeah, but I always say feeling comfortable is one thing. Looking good while feeling comfortable. Guys, don't ever say you're feeling comfortable and you look like you got hit by a bus. We don't allow that. Just make sure that when you say you're comfortable, you're in trainers, you better be looking like you're going somewhere. Anyway, welcome to the show again. And I really am glad that I got to catch up with you. And I know that, you know, we have been following, obviously, on this show, as you would know, we focus on dissecting the business behind fashion in Africa. But at the same time, the conversations we have are actually spread so far, because at the end of the day, for us to be able to move in such a globalized world, you want to kind of know what your neighbor's doing, what your friend's doing on the other side of the street. And that is why we're having this conversation. Now, I want to just quickly just go straight into your work, especially from an e-commerce perspective. How do you, how would you say your work affects fashion sales since you started playing in the e-commerce space?
That's a very good question. Actually, I'm sure all your questions will be very good. Certainly with the work that I'm doing currently, it's working for larger companies. It feels as though we're chasing customer expectations. And technology is great, but what it's enabled people to do is it's given people access to things far quicker, far smoother than larger companies were familiar with being able to deliver. So what I mean by that is that people's expectations are for things to be fast, convenient, and, you know, whatever else. And traditionally, stores who or companies who have physical stores are not used to moving things that quickly necessarily. So in that case, that it's balancing customer expectations, which are growing exponentially, versus working with businesses which are very slow moving. And the challenge really for fashion is that you know, in other industries as well, but in particular fashion, let's say, is that, and in particular fast fashion, is that things got to be quick. You know, fashion moves so quickly. Things are based around seasonal trends. Seasonal trends, you know, come and go. You got edits. You have, you know, very small kind of collections and whatever else. How do you pick up on a trend which is in another country, another continent, and be able to respond to that very quickly? It's very difficult working for larger companies where they have to project maybe a year, 18 months, 2 years down the line necessarily. How do you reflect that? How do you be able to, how can you respond to that? So where my role sits is understanding what customers want, understanding the technologies that are available, and how do we get those companies to be able to respond to those customer needs?
It's amazing. I think, I want to just first of all say you've been in this e-commerce space for over 20 years, or just about 20 years. First of all, can you just tell us how it's evolved? Because my thing is, what's, everything's moving so fast. And and when people say things are moving fast, even fast fashion is faster than fast fashion last year or the year before. And those are the, this is just, I think, the awareness or just the conversation that we need to have to just also, just from an information perspective, just let those who are listening who are in the fashion business space, whether you're a stakeholder, whether you're a manufacturer, whether you're a brand, I'm sure this is good information. Those who are just sitting, who love fashion, who are wondering what we are talking about, this is going to affect you as well. So I think for me, the biggest thing is to just, first of all, have you just share with us the evolution of of just e-commerce.
I think that certainly one way of understanding that is think about your relationship to the web and to the internet. Think about how maybe 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 2 years ago, what was your relationship to being able to access the web, access the information that you wanted, see the things that you wanted, and be able to respond to that? In particular with e-commerce, were you in a position to be able to purchase the things that you want with the devices that you had access to? So whether that was a desktop computer, a laptop, a tablet, or a phone. So if you think about now that everybody has access to the internet pretty much in their hand right here, right now. Obviously, depending on your network connection and, you know, whatever else. But if you compare that to 20 years ago, it may be that you would only have access to the internet if you're at work or if you went to an internet cafe or whatever else. So on the one hand, you've got the access to technology has expanded very quickly across borders. It means now that you've got not just information about things in other countries, in particular with fashion, for instance. It means now you're exposed to styles and trends much quicker than beforehand. It may be that there was a trend that was happening in New York. You may not see it for 6 months. You may not see it for a year or whatever else. But now, through something like Instagram or through, you know, maybe Facebook, you know, in the past, but let's use Instagram as an example. You know,
Lionel, are you saying Facebook is the village? Because I call it the village, and to no offense, but it still works. But
it still works. It still works. You know, it's the whatever tool you want to use, whether it's Twitter, Instagram, or otherwise. But using Instagram as an example, a trend that was popping, or that is popping right here, right now in New York, you can see that right here, right now in Nairobi. You can see that right here, right now in London or whatever else. And so I think that having connections with different people in different parts of the globe, whether that's through friends, family, or just by following people that you've heard of, you know, things like, you know, YouTube and whatever else, it means that the access to information is pretty much instantaneous. That means then the access to trends is pretty much instantaneous. So the next logical step would be that if I can see that trend, if I can see that thing that's popping in Nairobi or popping in Lagos or popping in Johannesburg, can I buy that? When can I have access to that? Where can I get that from? And so then it comes down to the challenge that you see with fashion, for instance, which is arguably, one of the challenges is arguably logistics. How do you get that product from, yes, I can see that thing is great and looks amazing. How do I get that from New York to Johannesburg right here, right now? And I say right here, right now, because people are used to, with their experiences maybe with Amazon or other online retailers, that if you want something, you can get it within a day, 2 days, a week, you know, tops. A week feels late to some extent.
But that just takes us back to the consumer we're dealing with. Well, is that instant gratification, yes. Now or never.
Mm, absolutely. You know, and then that's the thing. So if you think about when I first went to Kenya in 2012, people from London, people from the States, we may have thought that going to Kenya is like, oh my God, it's going to be the internet or access to technology is going to be 50 years behind what we've seen in the States or in the UK.
Oh my, you guys really feel that way?
Well, of course, that would be the perception. You know, first of all, you think that, you know, it's first world, third world, you know, so on and so on, blah, blah, blah. But what was interesting about my experience in Kenya in 2012 was that mobile payments was maybe at least 3, if not 4 years ahead of what it was in the UK. So the idea of actually, was it M-Pesa, I think it's called, or M something or another, at least anyway.
M-Pesa.
There you go. So just the idea of actually sending money between different accounts via your mobile phone, that was way ahead of what it is in the UK.
But let me just quickly just help you understand. M-Pesa is not even, you don't need a bank account.
No, it is.
You need a phone.
You just need a phone, exactly.
And then
you go and
withdraw. And
absolutely.
You pay. And just to add into that as well, not to catch you, is when I went to, one of the times we were in Kenya, went to visit family or whatever, then we're like, okay, we want to go to Mombasa, whatever. We're like, we need to buy a ticket. Everyone's like, what's your M-Pesa? What's your, send us your number. We send it with that. We're like, I don't have M-Pesa. God, if I hear one more M-Pesa, I'm going to shoot someone. I do not have. And everyone looks at you like you're crazy because if the airline ticket we had to buy, my cousin had to use her M-Pesa because I was like, okay, you know what? Do your M-Pesa thing and then we'll pay it back.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying that I can imagine. And that was, you say you were in Kenya in 2012.
That was in 2012.
Now imagine we're in 2017.
Yeah, now we're in 2017 and it's only happening. Now in in Europe, for instance.
Oh, you have M-Pesa here?
Well, it's not called that, but it's the same principle. Okay. That you're just literally sending money from one telephone account into somebody else's telephone account. Okay. But I think that the point there is that the way that what I saw in Kenya, and I'm sure it's the same in many other countries as well, is that there's been a huge leap in terms of payment. Because logistics is one thing. In terms of shipping the goods, mm-hmm. is a challenge. Storage, you know, so on and so forth. Shipping, and, you know, and so forth. But the other side of the difficulty is payment. How do you pay for those goods? You know, what is the? How do you transact with the person supplying the goods and the person who actually wants to purchase right there and then? So it's great having access to that information via Instagram, for instance. But how do you make that into commerce? How do you actually? How do you deliver that stuff, and how do you pay for it? You know.
So I want to just touch on that, and I'll say it to you. I think about 3 times I have opened up my online store and then closed, mm-hmm. just not closed it. I normally put it on a bad hold. In fact, mm-hmm. what I'm doing, nobody should be doing. I don't think it's good. I don't think it's a good way to do it. But sometimes you have to take a pause and say, sure. hold on. Mm. So first challenge was, for the first time I opened my online store, was I would get all of these people wanting to buy my product.
Yeah.
And I would get someone from Australia wanting to buy a bralette that costs, say, like $50.
Yeah.
But shipping, to ship the $50 bralette was $100. So, I mean, that's $150 for one bralette that's $50 worth. And what they would start doing is return. So they would want returns.
Yeah.
And then that's the worst thing, because you're dealing with... there's also just the excitement and the fact that, okay, you feel like there's progress, you're making sales. But at the end of the day, those sales are not... They actually translate to problems.
Yeah.
And then I decided to close. That was the first challenge. The second challenge... And I'm talking... when I speak on behalf of a lot of brands who are... on the teething phase or other phases of this whole challenge when it comes to, if you can't beat them, join them. But then when you join them, you're still falling over on one. Yeah, exactly. So the second thing was, I think the biggest thing was, for the second round, was logistics.
Yes.
Straight up. It's like, who's the shipping people are late? The who is late? Yeah. Somebody's pissed. Someone wants their money back because they didn't. That's a very big challenge.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's just a challenge in Africa. I think it's a challenge
across the board.
And the reason, I think, for me, that also with Amazon being the retail giant right now, online retail giant or e-commerce retail giant, is because they are a logistics company.
Yes.
They have that. They've got that so covered that the... If they were to break their legs like we do and we say, oh my gosh, this is my teething phase, they'll probably break their legs sending Lisa's things maybe to John. But even that will not happen. They've got it right. So my question to you, and I think this is also a question, we've also just had like a tweet come in, someone's asking the question. How is it, how do you, because it's not, I don't think that people don't want to progress in this game.
Yeah,
I think that a lot of brands want to progress, but they don't know what to do with... What do you do when this happens?
Yeah.
Especially in the e-commerce. What's your advice, or what would you say, what would you propose in today? This is 2017, September 2017.
Ooh, that is a very tough question, because as you pointed out, logistics is a very, very... it's very complex. But what is very simple is that customer expectations are growing... They're expanding exponentially. And so, because if they're used to dealing with large retailers who, because they have volume sales, they can subsidize the returns based on the volumes that they sell, they can offer free returns. Those free returns may be focused on a particular market. But having said that, there is still this kind of a hook of like, you know, buy what you want, send it back, it's not a problem, because they know that people will order 3 things, but they'll maybe keep 1. That's just kind of that thing about fashion, for instance, that they'll buy maybe multiple sizes or multiple colors, or just 2 or 3 different SKUs or 2 or 3 different items, because they're not exactly sure what it is that they want. They want to try them on and then be able to send them back. So it's
that what's happening?
Oh, that's certainly what. Yeah, that's certainly what you see in large companies. Yeah,
I kind of got that one late. I'm like, yeah. Who does that? Because it's not me. But is that how it happens?
Yeah, it's a thing. It's a thing. Absolutely. So, for instance, when I worked at Harrods, and it's the same also for LVMH, but absolutely at Harrods, it was definitely a thing that, you know, we'd have to factor in that our sales, you know, you report on the immediate sales over the weekend. Oh, it's fantastic. But you also have to recognize that really a week later, maybe 2 weeks later, you really factor in the sales on that basis because of the idea that people do returns.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, if somebody's purchasing for an event, they may know exactly what it is that they want. That's the perfect customer. The other perfect customer, because all customers are perfect, but the other perfect customer may buy 2 items or 3 items, but they're not sure which one that they want to keep. So,
but why would you buy 3? Like, if you can afford it. Maybe we have different principles.
If you can afford it.
No, I think we just operate differently.
Well, I mean, it's just how some people shop.
Would you buy 3 of that shirt?
And
then say, let me see.
No, probably not. No, but then I think then there's also this combination between if customers have access to a bricks and mortar store, then they can physically, you know, try, they can see how something drops, they can hold it up to the light and everything else.
I understand, but I'm just going to say to you, the consumer who's buying 3 needs to go back to brick and mortar. They're not ready for online. If you're ready for online and you think you live in a digital world, those who are listening, you better buy 1 black shirt and then go to the shop
and
buy everything. Go to the mall. Take your trip to the mall or the shop or whatever, or the high street.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing though, because sometimes if you offer free returns, then maybe that encourages people to multi-purchase and then return. Do you see what I mean?
No.
You know, so what I'm saying is
I don't. No.
You know,
I hear what you're saying. I just don't understand why anyone's buying 3 things to try out and then go back.
If you can afford it, that's the key thing.
It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. If you're going to get a return, you're getting a return anyway. Yeah, it means you can afford. It means you're still intending to buy 1.
Yeah, but then if for instance, you wanted to buy 1 outfit for an event, but you chose to buy 3, you'd have to have enough money in your credit card or your debit card to buy the 3. Even though you're going to get the money back, you're still going to reserve the funds on the card. So depending on who that customer is and what their income is, you know, what their spending patterns are, you'd have to be able to afford to be able to purchase 3 up front and then wait for the money to come back.
Well, depending on the price of the
product. Yeah, exactly. Depending on the price of the product and, you know, and so forth. So I think that there are so many moving parts with e-commerce, but I think the key thing is really understanding your customer, yeah, which is the same for any business. But in particular with your customers, really understanding what their intention is. When I worked in beauty, for instance, it was quite an even split between people who would buy products based on replenishment. So you know you have a particular lipstick or a foundation or an eyeliner that you like. You're just going to buy another one. You're just going to repeat that purchase. Mm-hmm. So it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no need for returns. It's not a problem. So that's your.
Do they return cosmetics?
Well, you're not really supposed to, but people will try.
No, but
no, you know, legally you should. But then it's, you know, you don't have to worry about those returns because people know what it is that they want, and they're going to repeat that purchase every month, 2 months, 3 months, depending on how long the product lasts and so forth. But then you get some other customers, and it could be the same person, but it could be that their mind's in a different space, and being in that different space now is that. It's more exploratory. So I know the shade that I like. I'm going to buy that one. But I want to try something else in addition to that. How do I choose this other shade? How do I go about that? So you can rely on a color swatch on the site. But ideally, you'd want to be able to see it in context. You want to be able to see that person wearing that particular shade, for instance. And that's where it's so important for the photography on the site. So, or if it's something where, for instance, you're picking up on, again, using the example of Instagram, you may see somebody wearing a particular shade. Is that shade of what you're seeing in the photograph reflective of the shade, or is it reflective of how the photo is taken? You know, so the more information you can get on what you're looking at in the photograph, it's much
the more likely.
The more likely people, consume. Yeah, exactly.
But let me now we're talking about that. Let's talk about. I just also want to say I went through. I was looking at sort of online stores, and I do this for my interest as well as a fashion brand, and then I do it also for information because I know that we need to share this conversation. We need to have these conversations on Fashion Lab, and we need to also just anyway. So bottom line is, I kept on finding this top 10, top 50, top. So I was looking at this. Online stores, and I'm like, I don't know. I was like, I know it was not wine, but I was like, I'm looking at these things. I'm like, what is it that's, why are they on the top 50? I came across on a platform called ecommerceplatforms.com. According to Katalin Zorzini, she had basically decided, they have curated and decided these are the top 50. And again, they obviously choose these sites based on the clean design, the great UX, whatever it is, the creative products.
Yeah.
But I look at these sites and I'm like, maybe because I'm not the e-commerce expert or because maybe I don't understand what it is. So what I want you to do is to also maybe just share with us, what are some of, let's just say from like maybe your top three, what would you say are the top three for anyone who's thinking as a fashion brand, who's thinking, gosh, I'm tired of this thing. I've tried it a few times. It's not working. Or what do I need to do differently to be able to get this site really attracting the right people and also bringing that money in? What would you say are your top three key things to consider when it comes to our presence online today? And I say today because what was fantastic 4 years ago, 3 years ago, two years ago is not fantastic anymore.
So things to consider is definitely payment. How does somebody pay for it? You know, let's get straight to the money. Start there and work our way backwards. But
so when you say payment, do you mean the payment payment options?
Yeah, payment options. Meaning, exactly.
So what would you say? Is PayPal has to be a guarantee? What is it that has to be a guarantee? Visa, obviously, we know, yes.
Yeah.
And MasterCard.
I think, you know, certainly credit cards and debit cards.
But you which know, ones? Great. You know, American Express, I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. It's not a very... American Express may work in... I don't know where it works. Because I just know that American Express is one of those cards that a lot of people can say easily, sorry, we don't accept American Express.
The reason why they don't like to accept it is because of the fees.
Oh, is it high fees?
Yeah, so whoever's... if you're the company... It's your brand, it's your site, for instance. And if you accept American Express, for every transaction, you have to pay American Express to process that transaction. And the cost of processing that transaction for American Express is more expensive than Visa and with MasterCard. So American Express is very popular in the US for one reason or another, but outside of the US it's a lot less popular just because of those fees, for instance. So I think that considering credit card and debit card, it's certainly a standard in the US and it's a standard in most European countries. But interestingly, if you market in Germany, for instance, or you have German customers, Germans culturally don't like credit cards. It's just their thing. They don't like credit cards.
What do they like?
They like bank transfers.
Like so EFTs?
Pretty much. Yeah.
So pretty much. But so are you saying that if I was to set up an online store, if the brand who's listening to us right now is trying to think, okay, what are my payment options should I have? What are my five top or four top, whatever?
Yeah.
So Visa, yes. MasterCard, yes.
Mm-hmm. I'd say so.
PayPal,
I'd say PayPal.
Would you say PayPal, say
PayPal is a really nice... balance between credit cards on the one hand and the more kind of obscure, kind of funky methods of payment like bank transfers, for instance.
So, and also, I think also when we look at it from a demographic perspective, I feel like there's countries where so many things are limited to a point where PayPal for sure, surely if you have PayPal, you should be able to do that because a lot of places, like I know like in SA, for example, the FNB bank has a link to PayPal, so once you have that once you're banking with them, then obviously automatically you can be able to. Because remember, there was a time where PayPal, there was no banks in Africa doing it. They were like, "Pay who? You can pay us again." You know. So I just think that the because of the fact that again we're going to talk about touch on globalization just now before we wrap up, but the fact that you know, you're not just dealing with the UK, and you're not just dealing with, so you're not just dealing with Europe and the US. There is a whole world consuming the same thing.
Exactly.
You have all these people wanting the same product as well.
Yeah. And different countries have different habits and different priorities. So I think that with your brand, you know, you'd have to think about, yes, it's global, but at the same time, who do you think your primary markets are? So if your primary market for whatever reason, for instance, might be Germany. I mean, it's maybe less likely, but let's say, for instance, it was Germany. Then don't just rely on credit cards, for instance. You've got to think about what's applicable to the German market. And if you're dealing with in Kenya, for instance, maybe M-Pesa is the way forward. Then that way it's a much easier, much more convenient. It's boom, you can go, you know.
But I'll tell you something. The reason I asked you, and the reason I wanted you to also just share with us some key, why we would have to narrow it down these days, is because I'm telling you, this globalization is here. When you play in this industry today, and I always encourage fashion industry pros who are in the game, whether you're a brand, whether you're what, to try to find a way to expand, especially brands. Why would you limit yourself to the corner of the street where you live when the truth of the matter is you've got the hands, the world is in our hands. Like, we can play it, we can do what we want to do with it. Why would you limit yourself to a point where you're like, that's your corner? So my thing also is, unless you're trading only in Kenya, or in only in, I don't know, I'm sure Tanzania also has M-Pesa. I'm trying to think of which are the markets. If you're only playing in a place with M-Pesa play, put your M-Pesa on. Because also I think, isn't it too, does it cost more from a design perspective, or sort of, if you have someone working on your back end for your website or for your e-commerce, does it cost more based on if you get more number of stores, or I mean, not number of stores, number of ways to pay, or is it actually, does it not matter? Because my thing is, don't you think narrowing it down to just making sure that we know for sure that the PayPal, Visa, MasterCard, this, that, that has covered all the markets, and maybe M-Pesa too, I don't know, whatever, just does it matter?
It depends on your site. When it takes the payment, it's hooking up with another company. It's the other company that's going to take the payments on your behalf. So it depends on what what third parties, what they're offering, let's say. So how you can cut third parties out, well, maybe not cut them out, but you can have a separate personal relationship with PayPal, so it's going into your personal account, let's say, or you can go through a third party that has PayPal, credit cards, debit cards, bank transfer, any other kind of methods of payment available. So I think that payment, for instance, is very important. Think about how you're going to get somebody to pay for this item. Because on the one hand, it's good for them to see it, but if they're not going to buy it, then what's your relationship with that customer?
Oh, wow.
If they're just going to call you, then you have, somebody has to be available to take that phone call. Somebody has to be available to take that email. Do you see what I mean? So
you feel like we may be also slacking for people who are feeling like it's not working. Maybe that's something to also pay attention to.
That's something to consider. Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. To make
sure
that all your response, email, phones, everything, somebody's on the other end, receiving, moving, responding quick.
Yeah.
According to Lionel, what makes an e-commerce platform the best to be able to sell product to the highest level, maximize on your potential as a brand?
That was the first thing, payment. The second one was, or is, being very clear about what your promise is in terms of logistics. You know, don't overpromise. You know, I can get it to you tomorrow.
2 to 5 days.
Right.
That's two
be
to
very,
weeks.
Very clear about what it is that you're offering somebody. And so, you know, similar to the payment point, understanding who's your primary market. So if you're selling just internally in that market, then yes, you could offer, for instance, next day or 2 day delivery. But if you're thinking globally and internationally and whatever else, then obviously you have to kind of think a little bit broader than just that.
And maybe upping your days, so that if you know you're going to produce something in 2 days, maybe try to put it at 5 days.
Yeah.
I'm just saying this because that's my African trick, honey.
No,
I live in Africa, we trade in Africa. When you tell a client, when I say 10 days, trust me, it's ready in 4 days. Because I need that contingency and I need to save myself.
Yeah, for sure.
Rather you have a pleasant surprise receiving something earlier than like getting caught up with like, gosh.
Mm. So there's two more things. Mm-hmm. I need to say three, but I'm going to give you four.
Mm-hmm.
So the third thing is pricing. And what I mean by that is, what is the price of your product? You know, and so I think that, and it's the same for artists across the board, whether it's fashion, music, art, you know, otherwise. On the one hand, if you're very creative and you're very expressive and able to produce things, that's great. But think you need the business side of things also, in terms of how do you price that particular product. And, you know, linked, you know, to that, in Harrods, for instance, we work with some brands that were very particular about the way that they priced the same product in different markets. So, for instance, working with Vivienne Westwood, well, Harrods was just one website. Mm-hmm. It's harrods.com.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say, for instance, you see a product and it costs, you know, £1,000. But that £1,000 product was the same price irrespective of where it's being shipped. The shipping costs, yes, you know, you pay an extra £25.
Oh, so you don't embed the shipping costs on
No, they'll be separate. So there'd be £1,000 for the product, mm-hmm. £25 to South Korea, £5 to the UK. However, Vivienne Westwood, she wanted to say that, or she said, that in Japan, that product is actually £1,200.
Okay.
Yeah?
Therefore, it should be £1,200.
Yes, if you're picking a particular delivery destination, then you have to up the price of the product. And that's because we only have the one website.
So is that how you do it?
That's correct. Yeah. So the other way of doing it is that if you'll see it with some websites,
yeah,
it'll ask you which country are you in or which country are you shipping to. They'll ask you that question first,
yes,
and then give you the price of the products on the back of that necessarily. Because it may be then that in terms of your pricing, you may have a universal price irrespective of where it's being sold. Or you may decide that in this market, this is what I'm pitching it at. Because in this market, this is the expectation for luxury. This is the expectation for bespoke. Or this is the expectation for this type of product. It costs this much in this market. It costs that much in that market. So you really have to be, you know, quite clever about your pricing.
Tell me, Lionel, do you see a lot of brands within the markets that obviously you focus on,
mm-hmm.
migrating towards the e-commerce way of playing and trading?
Mm-hmm.
Or have you seen... What do you see in where you are right now? And I say this because I'm based in Johannesburg, and I can tell you what's happening in the continent right now. I know that Edgy can tell us what's happening in the US, and Fran can tell us what's happening in Europe. But the truth of the matter is, you're here now.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening here? Are people adapting? Are brands moving?
Brands are moving.
You seem to have all the brands moving with you. I mean, the level of the movement.
Mm-hmm. Brands are moving, but they tend to be a combination of either moving slowly or they're not quite understanding how quickly customers are moving faster than they are actually moving. And what I mean by that is that, again, it's that point about customer expectations. And I think with some of the larger brands, some of the luxury brands in particular, they're resting on their laurels in terms of, oh, because we're Chloe, people will buy our stuff anyway. We don't need to have a website. We don't need to sell it online.
And are they seeing us? Are they getting
Some brands are like, we don't sell online.
But how are they?
Exactly. It's literally what? You know, so for a customer to actually be able to purchase those products, they'd have to go into a store.
But what if they don't leave there? What about the market that they're not tapping into because
exactly. Yeah. But that's bearing in mind that some companies... their bottom lines are
covered already.
Yeah, they're doing very well.
But who's big enough to be big enough? When is big enough big enough?
Well, when your ego is big enough, you're big enough.
Okay, cool. That's
yeah,
nice.
Someone
write that down, please.
I think that's what it boils down to. And it's what was interesting about my time at LVMH, for instance, was that some of the LVMH brands didn't like online.
Mm-hmm.
Because they wanted the experience they wanted their products to be consumed within an experience, mm-hmm. which is in a physical store.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just about, I make these shoes or I make mm-hmm. these trousers, and mm-hmm. therefore you're going to buy them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a transaction in that sense. They wanted the transaction to be part of a theatre.
Mm-hmm.
So you're purchasing the product, but you're experiencing the product actually being in the store at the same time.
I want to come to you now, because we're talking about this, and because of the fact that online or digital is a new black, or whatever you want to call it. It's not going anywhere, and it's only getting more intense. Now, I want to talk about, just touch on, and I know that we are basically running out of time, but I have to touch on this. Let's talk about the virtual experience. That's what I want to talk about. On an article by Matt Egan around the brick and mortar industry, Wall Street bets that Amazon will doom department stores and retailers. And obviously they think the worst is yet to come for traditional retailers. Now, how do you see e-commerce affecting brick and mortar? But on the same note, let's talk about the virtual experience, because this experiences that we have to create online is no longer just, you don't just go online and say I landed on a www. What did you do? How did you, I mean, there's got to be an experience that now we are creating online, and that means that gone are the days of landing page buy. That's, I mean, like, who wants to just land buy? I mean, what are, so forget about that. And because I'm saying there will be a time where even the Louis Vuitton and the whoever it is and whichever other brand that's feeling that they still want to keep the experience, you know, on the ground.
Yeah.
Not everyone can come to your ground. Not everyone live in your area. Please. Sorry. So how do you, what is your advice, or what's your two cents around the creating that virtual experience online, and where you see the future for the traditional retail fashion industry on a brick and mortar perspective?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think that, you know, without sounding too dramatic, I think part of that is a generational shift. For those generations who are used to physically going shopping and deciding with their friends, let's go to this street, this mall, this place to go shopping and experience it in that way, where the internet has kind of crept and grown and grown and grown and crept up and has expanded, for them it would take a long time, if probably never, that online would be their only source of purchasing products. If you contrast that with some people who, if you're 20 years old right now, you've only ever experienced the internet. You've only ever experienced shopping online or whatever else. So I think that although, yes, people physically go shopping, and there is a benefit of actually meeting up with your friends. Let's meet up and head down the road and go to the store.
Not for me
anymore.
Anymore.
Sorry. Right.
There's no time. Someone deliver everything. Right.
Yeah. So I think that it's understanding what people's intentions are, what their expectations are. And I think that there's still a need for people to meet up and go shopping, or even just to do it by themselves, let's say. Do they have to physically go into a store? For older people, probably, yes, there is still that need. For younger people, and again, I don't want to make it too dramatic, you know, young, old, or whatever else, but for younger people who have only ever experienced the web, you know, who have only ever experienced Instagram being a thing, you know, Twitter being a thing, or whatever else, augmented reality and things like that, for instance, that will be their reality. That's not to say that I think that stores will disappear. I think there's still a space for stores.
You think?
But I think with those...
What's the name of the street? Please tell me.
Well, I assume... Yeah, good point. That's good
I'm
point.
Playing. I'm no, playing. No, I'm not playing, but I'm playing because we actually had this conversation. We tried to have this conversation earlier, and I was like, but just hold up.
I think there's still a space for stores, but what the stores mean and the relationship with younger people will be different than what it is for older people, where the web either didn't exist, but it existed in a parallel kind of space. But now, to try to make it omnichannel, to try and make it a unified experience, those things are changing.
I see. For me, I feel like, because I'm very fascinated, excitable. I love technology. I love how we can move forward. I love the idea of the virtual experience and how to create it. I'm even thinking, God, if I'm now relaunching this online store, how am I going to do it and what are we going to do? I personally would love to be able to walk into an online shop, see myself walking, put on the red dress, do a little twirl 360, get a little glass of wine in there. Well, I don't know how this is going to happen. I mean,
These things are happening right now. So, for instance, in beauty, there's a thing called Modi Face.
I think I've heard it. You know. L'Oreal or... Who's
Sephora, they use it. You know, it's Estee Lauder, they use it.
Okay.
And, I mean, arguably, this is in beauty. So it's not quite the same as fashion, but I think it's, you know, it's still kind of, there's a spillover. But for those who don't know what Modi Face is, essentially what it is that you upload a photo, or you take a photograph of yourself right there and then, and through augmented reality, it superimposes whatever beauty products that you want to choose.
And how it'll look on you.
And how it's going to look on you. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, using lipstick as an example, then upload your photo, you pick your color swatches, and then it will give you a slideshow of the different shades based on that photograph superimposing those colors.
And then what's going to happen, like, after the dress? After I can wear my... Because for me, these are the things I dream about. I'm like, after I can wear my dress as a fashion consumer, after I can wear that dress, it's red, throw on my heels, what? What's next? What's the next thing after that that's going to heighten our senses? And
the next thing after this, then, is that what Modi Face has shown, and it is actually very successful, what it's shown is that... there's certainly the need has always been there to kind of experience something virtually.
And to also experience yourself.
Yeah, to experience yourself. But the Modi Face thing is a flat 2D photograph. The next thing would be exactly what you said a minute ago, whereby if you have a video of you walking, there's a video of you from head to toe, then superimposing the clothes on you. Because I think that the thing about the physical store or having... the items that we mentioned returns is that it's one thing to see a beautiful, you know, product, a beautiful dress, a beautiful pair of shoes and whatever else, but there's just something about seeing it in motion. How does it look under the natural light or even artificial light? So I think that if you're and I don't think it's too far down the line, especially with the new iPhones and, you know, Face ID and everything else, but if you're able to film yourself in some way, shape or form, being able to superimpose those clothes on you so you can do your own catwalk, you can see yourself walking in those clothes, because when you're stationary the clothes may look fantastic, but once you start moving it's like, well, I don't really like the way it flows, I don't really like the way the fabric kind of feels, you know, in that sense. I think certainly beyond shooting yourself walking down a catwalk would be some kind of sensory experience. That's something that would be difficult on the current phones, for instance, but just a way to kind of get a feeling of what that fabric feels like on your skin, because seeing the motion is one thing, but feeling it is something else. And obviously being a purveyor of fantastic clothes and fantastic fabrics, there's something about when you touch it, also when you smell it, just something about that. So I think that those
are we going to smell things anyway. You know what, Lionel, it's really been great chatting with you. I know that we can sit here and talk again and again and all day and all night long again, but I just have to thank you for your time. Now I want to find out one more thing. What can we expect from Lionel Mullen in the next, say, what are you doing, what are you working on, what can we expect from you, what do you want to, what do you feel is your responsibility within this value, fashion value chain, what do you want to do on your own now
to be able to really it's set a good pace? For me, what I'm excited about is tapping into customer expectations, but also helping to shape and shape those experiences, you know, shape what those expectations are. Because certainly at LVMH, what they realize is that for champagne, because obviously LVMH is fashion, but also drinks as well, what they recognize is that champagne and cognac is very popular for older generations, but isn't as popular for younger generations. So although they still make a huge amount of money selling those products, what they recognise is that for younger people who either drink less, or if they do drink, they drink gin, or they drink craft beers, or whatever else, Prosecco, another thing, is how do you tap into this new audience? How do you tap into consumers who are less worried about maybe owning something, but more experiencing something? And how do you relate that to fashion? Because obviously fashion is about purchasing and keeping and owning. Is there a space to rent clothes? You know, yes, there's a huge secondhand market, but is there a space to get hold of people's experiences whereby they are less worried about permanently owning something, but just temporarily experiencing something? You know, how do you tap into them? So yeah, a few things.
Lionel, you just like, it's been amazing. I can't even believe that I'm still talking to you. Someone, please come talk to me. Someone else. Anyway, congratulations in everything that
you
have achieved. And I wish you all the best.
And I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Your listeners.
Thank you.
And the other contributors
as well. How can our listeners get in touch with you if they wanted to get in touch with
you? Tweet the show. Go to the website. Go to Instagram. Facebook.
For Lionel.
Well, go to the show. You can just give me a shout.
Okay, guys, we'll give you. You cannot. It's not. It's a very private thing. You know. You can't be sending him different types of messages. But anyway, I mean, he's here. You will log on. You can log on to fashionlabafrica.com where we hold it down. And you can connect with us. We are info@fashionlabafrica.com. That's where you can also connect with us if you'd like to get more information about what Lionel's doing or get in contact with him and all of that. But I want to thank you so much for tuning into the show. We would love to hear from you, obviously. Like I said earlier, we are on Fashion Lab AF on Twitter. We are on Fashion Lab Africa on Instagram and Facebook. And we would love to hear from you. I also want to remind you that, you know, if you have any topics or any conversations or any subject matters that you think would be worth dissecting on the Fashion Lab here in Africa, please feel free to reach out to us. Let us know what it is, who it is, whatever it is, and let's just bring it to the table and dissect it. Otherwise, it's always, always nice. Now, before we wrap up this show, remember, it is that time of the day. Okay, so yeah, I know you got that. So it's that time of the day. It's the red wine. Yes, I know you heard all of that. And who would you want to dress and why? Ting, ling, ling, ling. So I'm going to start with you, Lionel. Ooh. Who would you want to dress and why? This is our last segment. Remember when we started
yes,
the show?
Yes, absolutely.
We said that we were going to have the last segment, which is my favorite. This is always my favorite part of the show. It's called Who Would You Want to Dress and Why?
Right.
So who would you want to dress and why, given the chance?
Ah, interesting. I would love to dress... there's a UK actor named Chiwetel Ejiofor. I would love to dress him.
Why?
Yeah. The reason why I say the reason why I picked him is that I think he's a fantastic actor, but I mostly see him when he's acting, and I don't necessarily see him a lot when he's relaxing. So if you ask me what was Chiwetel's style, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know. He's been in this film, that. I've seen so many looks, but I don't necessarily know what his style is necessarily. So I would love to dress him in the way that I think might be suitable for a particular event, for a particular, you know, show or whatever else. So Chiwetel Ejiofor.
It's beautiful. Lionel, thank you so much for joining us. Now me today, I think I want to dress Lionel today, just because I'm speaking to Lionel.
Get me out of this.
Lionel, you're very, the conversation with you has been very empowering, very, very informative. I'm very empowered and very informed. And I hope that for the rest of the listeners, I hope that you feel the same way. I want to dress you in one of my Lizzo Gumbo men's shorts. It's not many. I only have three styles, but you see Nick rocking very colorful ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I would want to dress you in one of those. Otherwise, I think that is who I want to dress today. But for those of you who are tuned into the show, thank you for joining us. And just make sure that you sit down and... En français, in French, you say réfléchir. So sit down and think about where you're going, your journey, what's the current affairs or what's the temperature or the climate right now when it comes to the fashion industry, and make sure that you can, I hope that you can get some tips from today's conversation and apply them in your businesses. All the best. Until next week, it is peace and love.
Fashion Lab on CliffCentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.